Nation proudly presents WrestleMania! Champion Ric Flair defends the title against the number one contender, the Macho Man, Randy Savage. The maniacal Sid Justice goes one-on-one with the immortal Hulk Hogan. And what could prove to be Hulk Hogan's farewell match? It's a double main event. It's WrestleMania.
Hello and welcome to that 90s Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host James Dunstall, and today we are reviewing WrestleMania 8 all the way from the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, Indiana. And joining me today, once again from the UTT Podcast, we have UTT Rob and we have Mr. Dan Griffin. How are you doing, lads?
Yeah, doing good. Really excited to get into WrestleMania 8.
Yeah, same. It was an interesting thing last night, staying up till 2 a.m. to get my notes done, because my weekend went a bit awry, but I'm excited to be back with you boys talking about it.
Awesome. And joining us once again, Mags, and what podcast are you from this week, Mads?
Oh, my good Lord. Today I'll represent Radio Tech, as seeing as it's football-centric, and we've had some interesting news in the football world, so I'll represent Radio Techers. But yeah, like these two chaps, I watched WrestleMania 8 again over the weekend, and I remember in the last show I said that this was underrated, and I think I had a bit of a brain fart because I don't think this was the WrestleMania I was on about. Maybe right. I was on about a different WrestleMania, but yeah, this was I really enjoyed it. I mean, I haven't been back and watched it for a while because obviously Hogan must pause and he is a bit of a dickhead. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to talk about it.
Cool. So yeah,
it's about the Super League. It's gutting that Tolly's left us because we've no longer got a five-a-side team, so we can't get into the European Super League.
Yeah. I mean, he was the designated goalie anyway.
Cool. So, right, it's WrestleMania 8. So like I said, it was in the Hoosier Dome in front of 62,167 fans. 15,000 of them was gotten for free. Could you imagine being a fan in attendance and like a fan next to you got in for free? How pissed off would you be?
You'd be fuming. I mean, that's something I always do on holidays, though. I always kind of like ask people, oh, how much have you paid? Like, to make sure I've got a better deal than everyone. So can you imagine? Yeah, just going and going, how much have you paid for your ticket? No, you'd be fucking ripping, wouldn't you? Absolutely ripping.
I've been loads of wrestling events where someone on this podcast's got in for free and sat next to me.
It's not what you know, Rob, it's who you know. Yeah, I got to see Jushin Liger wrestle for free.
Nice.
Rev Pro Super Jacob at the Wrestling Media Con, because my mate who also wrestles, he was doing something there, and he just said, just walk in behind me as if you belong.
Oh, well. Nice.
And he just said he's with me, and I went. It was fantastic. I didn't even have to pay for the ticket either, because I won that in some competition, and then I somehow got the Impact show for free as well, but I can't remember how.
All right, next time wrestling's back on over here, Dan, me and you will have to tag team up.
It's all about the confidence. You walk in with swag, you barely get challenged.
Cool.
It was funny though, because I saw Eddie Edwards at the the food stand sort of thing, and he was coppering up and he didn't have enough money for a baked potato, and I'm thinking, Dan's getting into the wrestling for free and Eddie Edwards can't even eat. There's something wrong about wrestling here.
If I'd have been there, I'd have bought him his baked potato. Well, Eddie Edwards, if you're listening, I owe you a potato.
When I got back to my seat, I thought I should have done, but too late then, isn't it?
If I get him on the show one day, I'll definitely bring that story up. Cool. So, yeah, so it was on April 5th, 1992, the rest of the media world during the time. So in the UK music charts, top of the charts was Shakespeare Sisters, Stay. And he's a fan of that song?
I mean, I haven't listened to it for a while, but, yeah, it's not a bad one.
Yeah, wasn't one of the singers, like, pissed, like, during the video? Like, she was, like, off her tits.
It looked like It looked like a sort of a Bray Wyatt vignette or something, didn't it? It was a bit weird.
Yeah.
Good. And a very different tone to the UK charts. So top of the US charts was Vanessa Williams, Save the Best for Last. So very different tone. Top of the movie charts.
Is that the Gravy advert song? That's the Bisto Gravy advert song. It absolutely is. I'm going to look that up after this recording. I'm sure it is.
Good. So, top of the UK movies, speaking of Bray Wyatt, going back to Bray Wyatt theme, top of the UK charts was Cape Fear, Robert De Niro, and many of you know that's where Waylon Mercy got his gimmick from, and Bray Wyatt ripped off the Waylon Mercy gimmick, so throwback to that, that's a good film. And top of the US movie charts was White Men Can't Jump. Absolutely love that film.
Two good movies.
And video game world, so Double Dragons just got released for the Sega Mega Drive, and a couple of weeks after this, the Super Nintendo will be released across Europe. So we spoke at length about the Super Nintendo. Mags was a Sega guy, yes. Dan was young, and Rob, was you a Nintendo fan?
Well, I had a Mega Drive at the time. I've got a Super Nintendo now, which I actually had to revert to after an episode of UTT Podcast when I was playing WrestleMania the arcade game because the Mega Drive version didn't work anymore. So I guess right now, I'm a Super Nintendo guy.
I have actually played Double Dragon, but it's only because my old local actually had for a time had one of those like stand-up arcade machines that had about 500 games in one.
Yeah, right. Like a MAME.
Yeah, it was ace. And well, I think the game was ace. I was pissed and playing games, so I was enjoying myself.
Yeah, I've said to a few people, I got a Raspberry Pi. And it's got like MAME, Mega Drive, Master System, SNES, PlayStation. It's got like shitloads. And I'm too spoiled for choice. So it's great. I still always seem to retort back to Mario. But yeah, I'm spoiled for choice on it. Cool. So we go into the opening of WrestleMania. So another great Vince McMahon intro. And I'm a bit sad as well because this is the last time we actually hear that classic WrestleMania theme tune, you know, that dun, 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 dun. And I actually use that jib for my show, so I might have to go with next time. What do you think?
Yeah, it's sad if this is the WrestleMania that it goes on. That's actually quite sad because it just gets you in the mood as soon as you hear it. You know that you're watching WrestleMania. Yeah, what a shame.
The intro set the tone for the whole show, though. They talk about the title match first, but Hogan gets the focus and gets the rub and gets the pose of the so-called double main event.
I know, double main event, but the first part of the main event is literally smack bang in the middle of the card. That's beggar's belief.
There's no such thing as a double main event. You know, they're trying to bill it as a double main event, but it's always the one that goes on last that's most important. Mm-hmm. It's like when they used to have those dual-branded pay-per-views before the last brand split, and they'd have, you know, the World Heavyweight Championship match on first in a main event. It's like, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's like now with the two-night WrestleManias. I still don't really class the first night WrestleMania as a main event. I just class the last match off the card as the main event. So, sorry, AJ Taken, sorry, Sasha and Bianca, but these ain't main events. Cool. So, so we get the intro and then we go to Gorilla and Bobby. And Bobby's looking around for the centerfold of Elizabeth. And we go into the national anthem sung by Reba McEntire. Any of you fans of Reba McEntire?
Not based on this performance.
Same. Bobby even call her a Reba McEntire, saying that she was related to Tio Santana as well?
Yes, he did.
I did actually started so early again. His Mexican racism in.
Yeah, I did actually look up Reba McEntire. She's not Britt Baker's makeup girl's mum, as I thought. You know, it might be lame name legacy. And I don't know where she got the spelling of her name from. So she's not related to Drew. But it turns out she's actually one of the most successful country stars of the 80s and 90s. She's had like 91 individual awards. 24 number one singles, 16 number one albums, and bless her, she just did not have the voice for the national anthem. She was just a shade above Mean Gene Okerlund at WrestleMania 1.
But She had a huge belt buckle, though, didn't she? It was bigger than Willie Nelson's fake title the previous year.
That's the feud we need.
And a hairstyle that may put her in the running for the mullet of the Night Award.
The only thing I really remember for was being in Tremors. So she's Bert's wife in it, the gun nut. So that's the only thing I remember her for. But I tell you what, we did get there. We get a lot of panning to the crowd, and all I kept thinking while I was watching this, I thought, fucking hell, Dan's got a lot of content.
Just pausing it. It took Dan 11 hours to watch this WrestleMania. That, it weren't anything to do with drinking. It was because he had to pause it every time they did a Kevin Dunn camera cut.
No, I've been good this time. I've been good. I've kept it to the in-ring.
I did like the Jim Cornette look-alike with the little miniature American flags. I don't know if you spotted him. He had the full glasses. He looked like Jim Cornette from 1993. He was a spitting image. Cool. So, yeah, so we after Reba McEntire sang, we go to our opening contest. And, yeah, she's joined by her brothers, Bobby said, El Matador, Tito Santana. And, yeah, he's up against Shawn Michaels with the new theme song, Sexy Boy, sang by Sherry. And this is actually my favourite version of Sexy Boy.
Really?
Fucking really?
Oh, she butchers it. She, it's awful.
Makes it good.
And yet again, another El Matador match and another walk to the ring where he looks pissed off. He smiled a couple of times when fans were talking to him, but as soon as he got out of their ass out, straight back to having a stone face, he hated this gimmick with a passion.
But could you imagine being a child during the stage? So say if you was 11 or 12 years old, so for the last few years you've been hating on Sherry. Oh, she's horrible. But now when she starts coming out dressed like this, you would imagine he's like, well, what's happening? My favorite is Bobby.
Sorry?
And Bobby was putting her over, saying, "She's beautiful, look at that." And Gorilla says, you might need to see an oculist." And Bobby said, "There's nothing wrong with my feet."
There was a bit just after this where Gorilla Monsoon was having a go at Sherry for having a chest tattoo, which was quite clearly fake. It had been drawn on with crayon or whatever. But it's an amazing turnaround, isn't it, between the modern product and now, and what WWF think is acceptable and what they were deriding people for in the 90s. They were saying she was evil because she had a tattoo, I mean.
Bobby said it first. He said, he said, "Gorilla, you're only jealous because she turned you down. Will you stop?"
And there was a bit with Sherry where a part of her, the front of her dress fell off, and she spent about 10 minutes trying to put it back on. It was really distracting me from the match, to be fair.
What a trooper. it fast paced that things off. The one thing I did notice, though, so, and I remember this as a child because I always used to think it was Sherry screaming. But did you hear that woman in the audience screaming? At first, I thought it was Sherry, but then I realized it's not, because she's like, "Come on, Tito, get out of here, Sean." But constantly, and you hear her a few times during the night, she was like constantly at it.
Yeah, she's someone I would actually, I'm all for being loud at the wrestling, but she is one person I'd be really tempted to turn around and just tell to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. She'd clearly had enough of the 4%ers.
Oh, yeah. It was a decent match. And I tell you what I did like. I mean, Tito, like, he can be labeled as boring, but I've always liked the flying forearm, what he's always hit. And then you tried it a couple times, and it was a good match. But, yeah, end of the match comes, though, where Sean's on the apron, and Tito tries to body slam him back into the ring, but Sean holds the ropes, falls on top of El Matador, and gets to 1-2-3. So what did you think of the match? I've got to you first, Dan.
Yeah, it was all right. It did kind of, the constant going back to like the front face lock or the headlocks kind of lost me a little bit, but I suppose it just made the mid when they did speed up a bit more, a bit more meaningful. Really, I think I've been maybe a bit too conditioned by by some of the more fast-paced wrestling these days. I really did like Sean's jacket on his entrance when said, what was it on the back? So it was like, "I'm too sexy for this crowd." Like, yeah. Michaels, there's no one better at being a smug, arrogant twat. Because there's a good chance at this time he was exactly that, a smug, arrogant twat. It was weird seeing him hit the reverse crescent kick or the switching music and it not be a finish. But yeah, I thought it was good. Sherry worked well on the outside as ever as when she wasn't trying to fix a top. But yeah, I just really like the duo of Sean and Sherry.
Rob?
Yeah, it's. I thought it was a decent enough match. At the start, the crowd didn't really seem that much into it at all, and you're thinking, "Oh God, are they going to wake up?" But then they sort of came alive when Tito escaped the chin lock, and then you know, sort of goes into flying forearm, etc., and the crowd wake up. But I wondered if the end of this match was a botch, because they sort of fell on him awkwardly. And then they didn't replay it, and the commentators tried to sort of almost brush it under the carpet, right, we're on to the next thing. And you sort of, I'm not sure that was supposed to happen, and it's not the only time in this card that there's something that
goes wrong. I noticed that. It was kind of like, in my head, it was kind of like the finish was meant to be fat. Sean landed on top of Tito, and Sherry was meant to hold down the legs. It kind of felt like that's what was meant to be the finish, but the way they landed, it was too far for her to reach, so she never even bothered trying to reach. That in my head, that's kind of like the finish I thought, because it reminded me of Rick Rude, Warrior at WrestleMania 5, where Bobby held down the Warrior's legs. Very similar sort of finish, so it kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, it's probably just an audible being called then. Like you said, they weren't close enough to the rope, so they did what seemed to have worked, and it is noticeable, but I think they kind of get away with it, and as Rob said, not going to the replay and kind of like moving on to the next thing and like brushing under the carpet makes sense. But for me, it was a decent opener. We've seen better pay-per-view openers, but we've seen far worse ones as well. It's interesting that this is smack bang in the middle of Michaels being the curtain jerk for WrestleMania. I think he's also the curtain jerk for WrestleMania 9, and then obviously that moves further up the card. But yeah, I enjoyed the match more than Tito seemed to anyway.
Yep. And Bobby Heenan was daddy's crystal ball as well, because he said that Shawn Michaels would be the star of the 90s. So, but I think he did also say like a few pay-per-views back that the Rockers would be the tag team of the 90s. So I think he had more success with his mission.
It's like Jerry Lawler picking a winner at the Royal Rumble every year. You'd change it about four or five times.
Yeah. As soon as some big heel comes in, that's his new pick.
Yep. So we go to the next segment. So we see Gene Okerlund on the stage, and he's joined by the Legion of Doom without the tag team title. So turned out 2 days after the Royal Rumble, when they defended titles against Natural Disasters, Hawk got done for failing drug test, so they decided to take the belts off them and give them to the Money Inc., drop them to Money Inc., and that's what happened. So Hawk and Animal comes out, and they're joined by Precious Paul Ellering, making his debut on WWE TV. I presume it is. I haven't spotted him before. And weird promo, because Paul Ellering came across as a heel. And then Hawk started to talk about runaway trains. My head off, kept thinking of was the song. So, what do you think to this promo?
I mean, go ahead. I'm only going to wax lyrical about it anyway. So, if you want to shit on it, go ahead.
Well, I did really enjoy the promo. I did, but the funny thing was, Paul Ellering seemed to have notes on his hand. Mm-hmm. There was something written on his hand, and he kept looking at it. So, it reminded me of when The Rock and John Cena were feuding, and Cena did a rap about The Rock, and he said that it was all in the wrist, because The Rock had to have notes on his hand when he'd come out and done his song. So,
I think the most famous botch of that was The Miz, when he was doing the Diva Search contest, and he was on the stage, and he fucked up the phone number. He was like, 019, oh no, here it is, and he got it. How he recovered from that to end up becoming a two-time WWE champion is beyond me. So, not a bad promo, but Mags, I'm guessing you loved it, big LOD fan.
Yeah, this is, for me, one of their classic promos, the whole kind of like the runaway train being scary, and then even scarier with you see who's driving. One thing that I noticed that I've never noticed before, because maybe I've watched this promo on its own before, like the lead up from the match before, but Gorilla says, let's go back to the locker room to Mean Gene. But they're not in the locker room. They're actually in the a stage at the side of the audience, unless all the wrestlers are getting changed there and getting... But yeah, for me, it's one of the best promos. I absolutely love it. It's a shame that this leads to Rocco, the dummy, coming up very soon. But yeah, it's the kind of promo where I haven't watched it for years, but I can still rhyme it off word for word.
Cool. So next we join Sean Mooney's with Jake Roberts. And yeah, they basically tell about East Field with The Undertaker. So last time we saw him at Survivor Series, this Tuesday in Texas, he was still feuding with Macho. And then at the Rumble, they still feuded. So during a match, I think it was Saturday night's main event, it might be wrong, or it might have been the Superstars, Jake came through the curtain and was about to grab the steel chair. And he was like, I'm going to hit the next person who walks through this curtain. And it would have been Liz, but The Undertaker saved her. And a few days after, on the funeral parlor, Jake said to Taker, whose side are you on? And Taker replied, not yours. And then Jake trapped Taker's hand into the coffin, started DDT and Paul Bearer, and led to this feud. And yeah, Jake with another good promo. So what do you think to it?
I really enjoyed it. I always enjoyed Jake. He's just one of the all-time greats. You could put him top three for me of all time, but this one was just, it was particularly good because he was basically providing live commentary of him attacking Undertaker and Paul Bearer and just really getting a chance to revel in his bastardry, which was really nice. And I love the line where he said, what was it, the strongest man doesn't always win, the biggest man doesn't always win, the smartest man, the coldest man does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just before the camera shows him hitting the DDT on Paul Bearer. And it was just, I enjoyed it.
And he had to get his shithouser in with President Jack Tunney as well, when they were talking about no reptiles allowed near the ring. And one thing I did notice, and it actually part of it was in the Tito and Shawn Michaels match, I think The Rock has watched this pay-per-view multiple times and essentially stolen his gimmick from this show, because on Tito's knee pads, he had a Brahma bull. And Jake, at the end of this promo, does the best Rock's eyebrow in the business. I think The Rock has watched the beginning of this and thought, I'm having that.
Not bad thing.
Yep. And we got another sort of sleazy element from him as well. He said hitting The Undertaker with a chair was simple foreplay. So it's going back to that just slimy, makes your skin crawl type promo that we've seen from him over and over again.
Cool. So, yeah, and it leads us to our next match, Jake Roberts v The Undertaker, and Jake's out first. No snake, which I'm disappointed in, but, you know, does his pose in the corner and gets ready, and, yeah, The Undertaker comes out. Big fan reaction for The Undertaker, and my favourite part was when Taker was choking Jake. I think that's what it was, and the referee won't disqualify him, and Bobby's like, hound them. He's like, dude, disqualify him. Gorilla's like, why don't you go down? And Bobby was like, well, I'm needed here. So quick and so pretty, wasn't he?
He was. There was a great bit at the start of it as well, speaking of Heenan, when Gorilla says there's always a smell of formaldehyde as Taker walks in, and Heenan just says, I thought that was your cologne.
It's so brilliant. I mean, you can tell that they don't script that, and it's just Heenan playing off whatever Gorilla says, and it's just so naturally funny.
What do you think to McAfee joining the SmackDown announced team?
I'm all up for it. I think he's decent on commentary, and I thought he looked decent in that match he had with Adam Cole.
Apparently, they said they're going to let him just do what he wants, which I find it hard to believe, but hopefully they do, because I haven't really listened to much of his stuff, but I listened to a couple of his podcasts lately, and he's a pretty, like, wisecracking sort of character, and that's hopefully just a bit of fresh air for the commentary team, because believe me, WWE needs some fresh air.
the ironic thing is that they let one of the better commentators, Samoa Joe, go, which was just, that baffled me. How do you have someone of Samoa Joe's quality and not have anything for him? But yeah, getting back to this match, I mentioned that Tuesday night in Texas that I thought the slow pace of having Hogan as opponent really didn't work for The Undertaker for me. But here, it's a lot of the same pace, but it just seems to work a lot better. I think Jake is so good at being that ring general, and I thought it led Taker to a really good match. I mean, it was over pretty quickly, but it was a really interesting match, and I really enjoyed it.
The thing I loved about it was because Jake hits the DDT twice, but he wastes so much time each time after hitting the DDT that it kind of makes sense when The Undertaker kicks out after the second one. It wasn't, you know, straight finisher, straight into it, you know, and then sort of sitting up with a shocked look on his face, like he's just wrestling today sort of thing. But yeah, it kind of made sense, and, you know, sort of, because he'd gone and chased Paul Bearer after the second one sort of thing, yeah. You know. I thought it was really good psychology.
The start of the match as well, when Jake was using his speed and sort of the predictability of the Undertaker's always going to come in with his arms up, so he was ducking underneath and getting a body shot in. But it was having no effect, even though it really should have. That was just like a nice little sort of start to the match. It felt like a much longer, I think it was about 9 minutes, and it felt much longer, but in a good way, if that makes sense. They seemed to cram a lot in. Yeah. And just before, I have to get this in now, Heenan's dad joke in the middle of it about Paul Bearer. You know how Paul Bearer got that urn? The old-fashioned way. He earned it.
He was actually asked what's in the urn, though, and we've seen what's in the urn this Tuesday in Texas.
Yeah, but it's not in the urn now. It's all over in the ring in Texas. Is this also the match where they mentioned Sheffield? And they slate Sheffield off somewhat chronic, like none of them really want to go there.
I think it's in a later match. In fact, it's in the Bret Hart Roddy Piper match, because Bobby Heenan says, "I'll be in Sheffield, England in a few weeks." And Gorilla Mom Spoon says, "So sorry to hear that." And I know the South gets, you know, a lot of derision up here in the North, but I've been to Sheffield and it's lovely.
Not too bad.
Yeah, but they didn't have a Taco Bell that you could go to between wrestling shows in the 90s.
Well, they do now.
Did they have Meadow Hall back then? I don't know. Cool. So, yeah, Jake hits a couple of DDTs, goes to chase Paul Bearer, and then Undertaker catches him, does a tombstone to the outside. 1, 2, 3, and that's it, gentlemen. Jake Snake Roberts is gone from WWE, so... The reason what led up to this, he wanted to spend less time wrestling, and he actually wanted Pat Patterson's job in creative, because Pat Patterson was on vacation, you could say, due to some legal matters, and Jake wanted the job, but Vince wouldn't let him have it, because Vince was always going to bring back Pat. So Jake got a contract offer from WCW for some really good money, and Vince McMahon wouldn't grant him his release, something that's never changed. He wouldn't grant him the release. So literally before the match, Jake held him up saying, "If you don't give me my release, I'm not walking out." Vince, with a gun to his head, basically said, "Okay, then you got your release." So Jake was gone after this. Unfortunately, during the time between having the deal, which wasn't written but was promised to him, Bill Watts took over WCW, and it's well known that Bill Watts was pretty tight. And I forgot the figures, but I think what Jake ended up getting was a quarter of what he was offered, if that.
Wow.
And ended up feuding with Sting. Didn't last long over there. Done some shit shows and that. And he didn't come back to the WWE till 1996. So one of the biggest stars of the 80s. And that's going to be a trend we'll see during this night. But how do you feel about Jake being gone? I mean, me and you, Rob, the first podcast we ever done was Rumble 90. And one of the things we pointed out was Jake's crowd reaction when he came out. So how do you feel seeing Jake go?
It's a real shame, but you've got to kind of remember with Jake that he's got all these demons And, you know, he does come back to WWF a little bit later on, but he's clearly not right. And then he's got a long period where he's not right. There's always been that sort of what if, you know, he's one of the greatest wrestlers to not be WWF champion, but would we have got quality out of him, or by the time they put the belt on him, would he have been too far down that path? So,
yes.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, but it is a shame to see him go, and it's a real shame that he got screwed on that WCW deal. But the problem pre-bill what's coming in, they were writing checks with in crayon. They just didn't even think about the amount of money they had coming in to what was going out. But
that's true. Dan, what do you reckon, the Jake going?
I can only echo what Rob said, really. It's just, as a fan, obviously really sad to see him go. He was always a top heel. Like the stuff we covered with him and Elizabeth, you know, no one else, I don't think, could do it like Jake. He had that particular brand of just being a dick, but one that you love to hate and see him get his comeuppance. So, yeah, for just being a fan, really sad to see him go. But like Rob says, you can't ignore the backstage stuff and all the factors that led to it.
Yeah, I think you make really good points, and you can see kind of the remnants of stuff like this and this kind of being threatened by the wrestlers. You can see why Vince likes to lock down talent and keep them to guaranteed contracts and 90-day clauses and things like that, because this happened to him so many times. I mean, you can count dozens of big stars who've held him up at the last minute for either big payouts or to get their releases or stuff like that. So you can understand why he is now the way that he is, with hoarding talent and with locking him down to guaranteed contracts. It's guys like Jake and Scott Hall and Jeff Jarrett and Ultimate Warrior that's give him this mindset.
Well, so before we get to the next segment, I forgot to mention that one of the matches, what was meant to happen tonight, was the British Bulldog. I think he was against the Berserker, but because of time constraints, that match had to get cancelled, unfortunately. So no Bulldog tonight. But we go backstage, see Gene Oakland, and he's with Roddy Piper and Bret Hart, and I love this promo.
We have arrived.
We have arrived. You know, I gotta say, first of all, man, I gotta tell you how much I love your family. I gotta tell you how much I love your mom. I know this guy since he's been knee high to a grasshopper. I remember when they were changing your potty pants. I remember even when, of course, you weren't potty trained till he was 7, but everybody's got their problem. Remember tying bows in our shoes when we were kids? Yeah, of course, your shoes were always tied together. Doesn't matter to me, because I remember when Mrs. Hart used to come down, man. She used to make them sandwiches, man. Throw on that bologna. Of course, only one piece of bologna, but that don't matter. I was hungry. Then she'd come up and she'd go to her little...
What is this? Yourself.
This is nice, huh? Here I am having a little fun trying to make you at ease, gonna have a nice con to keep them to yourself, have a nice contest, and here you want to be a hero all of a sudden, huh? You want to be a hot shot all of a sudden. You want your belt all of a sudden. Is that the idea, huh?
Look, all I care about is one thing. I want to win back the Intercontinental belt. You got it. I'm gonna take it.
You keep your hands to yourself. Let me help you out a little bit, buddy. We can settle our argument. You know. Oh, yeah, you damn betcha we can. Why do it here when I can have a million people watch me rip your head off?
Would have had you.
No, you wouldn't have.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. Bye-bye. Bret Hart on bye-bye. His way to the ring.
Bye-bye.
This should be a classic, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think so.
Roddy Piper defending against
today.
The challenger. Let's get back to ringside.
CG Mine.
In Bret's book, they said they had no build-up for this match, so they said we had to sort of lay it all out on the promo, and Roddy Piper was basically like treating Bret like a child, saying, oh, I remember when you were this high, your mother would make you slap the bologna. I mean, there was only one piece of bologna, but he still slapped the bologna. Roddy was wild, but Roddy was so good during this promo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can understand there being no build, because this is coming off the back of Bret trying to leave and then getting the title took off him, and then building his way back to the title. So, but yeah, what a great promo. The started off really jovial and respectful, and then getting to the threatening at the end. I loved it.
I love the line from Roddy about, why would I fight you here when I can do it in front of 7 million people? I mean, it's the same people watching the show, essentially, that are seeing the promo as well. But even so, it's just that sort of prize fighter mentality. And, you know, I mean, Kevin Owens, when he came into WWE, sort of had that as his gimmick. But you kind of don't get that enough in wrestling. The sort of, you know, you'll get people saying they're a businessman, but then they don't sort of betray that character. I think it'd be a lot better if a lot more people were pushing the I'm working for the money angle.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's one of the things, we'll notice it in one of the tag team matches later, but like sometimes when a team was walking out, even though there was the champions that walk out in the match, they'll say, like sometimes commentary put off, or they'll lose the winner's purse and things like that. So it's just like, you know, it's like, yeah, they're keeping the titles, but they've lost the purse and things like that. And it's like you said, Rob, that's something what's missing is like to say there's financial ramifications of not having the match in the ring, for example, and just doing something else. So it's just these little touches what makes a huge difference when you think about it. Great promo, but yeah, get into the match then. It's Britt Attfield, Roddy Piper for the Intercontinental Championship. And like I know with hindsight, these are two of the greatest of all time, but I mean, look at the quality of the two wrestlers who's wrestling for the IC title. And no disrespect to Big E and Apollo Crews, because they're talented, but like, you look at them, these two, and these are two megastars, and you look at, like, say, Apollo, or even Sami Zayn, who was IC champion at the time, I'm thinking, it's just not the same, is it?
Well, I mean, it wasn't necessarily always the same for all the Intercontinental Championship matches we get, even in this era. But yeah, the stars had aligned, and especially with them having that history together, the two of them, and then where it's going to go on from, you know, the Intercontinental Championship is going to go on from here at SummerSlam. It kind of was a golden era, wasn't it?
And it's so Britt and Roddy, a few hip tosses to start things off. And the one thing I've always enjoyed, though, Bret Hart is so good at playing possum. So he goes for like a running drop kick. And he's done this a few times. So he says, oh, he shows it at them. And he looks so convincingly. And then all of a sudden, he just spring up to his feet or just hit a small package or something like that. So,
and that slap afterwards when Papa slapped him. Oh, that had some stank on it.
Did you notice that Piper just carried on the mind games and the shithousery from the promo from the second he got in the ring? Mm-hmm. He took forever to get that kilt off. Oh, and yeah. It's another little touch, which was like that. Just pissed. Even I think Brett was playing up to it as well, you know, waving his arm around, saying, come on, get it going, you know, get your shit together. And it was awesome. I really enjoyed this match. It, you know, started out slow. There was a bit of one-upsmanship involved, you know, from, you know, even just hitting the hip tosses and all of that. There was a nasty looking spill to the outside when Brett went on the crossbody. Yeah. Which obviously Roddy had to reset and go over backwards, and I don't think that did either of them any favors. It always hurts, but that looked like it really hurt.
Yeah. Did you spot where Bret Hart got busted open?
Yeah. Well, they did that when, because it'd gone out. Bret had gone out of the ring, and Piper holds the ropes open for him, doesn't he? And then he sort of gets in, and Bret's there. You know, it's. There's sort of a round of applause from the crowd for the sportsmanship. And Brett then checks his bootlaces and Piper slaps him right across the face. And then it's kind of, it looks like he's bleeding after that. So I didn't know if he'd bladed when he was on the outside.
He's on the outside, so they played it off. So, you know, went to the part where Roddy done the short fist where he had him in the headlock and like started punching him in the face. And then they both spilled to the outside. So it was when Brett was, I think it's when he was on the inside where he fell to the floor and he's crunched over.
It's when Papa whips him into the turnbuckle and he goes head first into the turnbuckle. That's when I thought he bladed, because that's when you could see the blood start trickling up.
Yeah, and the way he done it, like, so I've always understood that there's wrestlers who puts the blade in the wrist tape, which I presume would be the savers. He used to spit out, so I'm thinking, man, that sounds fucking dangerous, having a razor blade in your mouth, even though it's a small piece. And I mean, he does such a great job. You literally have to like pause it to try and find it. I mean, we'll see it a bit different with Ric Flair later on.
And this was at a period when Vince has said absolutely no blurting whatsoever. And I think it's in Brett's book that he actually admits to blading, but he told Vince that he didn't, so he got away with not getting fined.
Yeah, they said it was legit. It was an accident, that, so they got away with it. And yeah, and towards the end of the match, so there's a referee bump, and Roddy grabs the ring bell, and Heenan's like, do it, and decides to drop it, slaps on the sleep hold, and Brett kicks himself off from the ring corner. 1, 2, 3, and the new Intercontinental Champion there. I just wrote down, fantastic match. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, really enjoyed it. I think I've mentioned before, I'm a big Bret Hart fan, always love his work. Roddy Piper was somebody I never really saw much of growing up, just sort of here and there, knew his reputation, but I've really come to love his work watching it in recent years. And Piper was in incredible shape for this match. I've rarely seen Piper look that good. But yeah, I just loved everything about it. The shit I was in when he's, you know, when he, I thought Piper directed Bret to check, and the ref to check Brett's laces. I thought he'd just gone, oh, you've got a little, you know, the elder ropes was, oh, check your laces, mate. And then just popped him. And the finish as well, when he's done the right thing and lost. Just absolutely fantastic, and a great way to extend the feud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the end of the match, you really get Piper putting Brett over. You know, he offers him his hand, he puts the bell on it, and the crowd seemed just incredibly invested in it. It's not often when they do that sort of, you know, giving the rub thing, that it actually works. Sometimes it feels a bit condescending, or, you know, the crowd doesn't really believe it, but it really felt like sort of a passing of the torch.
Yeah, and I think this was, it's the third time Piper got pinned. But the other two times was against Superfly and Ric Flair. And I don't think it was on TV. Definitely not on pay-per-view. So I think this was actually the first time you saw on TV or on pay-per-view that that Roddy Piper actually got pinned. So to go all them years and this is the first time he got pinned, it says a lot considering Roddy Piper was at the first ever WrestleMania.
And what a great transitional champion he was as well, knowing what had gone on backstage for him to have that title, and the way he kept that title elevated in the short period that he had it. And then when it went back to the original owner of it, it felt like it was so much more than it was originally. I thought this was an outstanding match, probably one of my favourite Roddy Piper matches that I've ever seen. So well done. Great storytelling from both of them. And nobody came out of this a loser for me. I thought they both really just stood out.
Yeah. And there was a fun story what happened the night before this as well. So if any of you have read the Bret Hart book, so, you know, eventually at Survivor Series 97 that Bret Hart knocked out Vince McMahon. Well, the night before this, he almost knocked out another McMahon. So before you get your hopes up, it wasn't Linda. it was actually Shane. So the night before, they're all at a bar, and I think Brett went to go to the toilet or something. So he was there with his wife, which made a change. And Shane was trying to put the moves on there, but Shane had no idea that it was Brett's wife. And wow. Apparently, like, she he goosed her as well. And Julie, so she told Brett. So Brett looked at Shane. Shane looked confused, so he pinned Shane up against the wall, and like, yeah, he was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And Brett was like, if you ever go near again, you're dead, man. So yeah.
How dare you put the moves on my wife who I've cheated on umpteen times already? Yeah. I mean, it's not on, don't get me wrong, but Brett can't exactly take a moral high ground.
It's a fun story for what it was. Cool. And yeah, and sad to say, so this is actually Piper's last match on pay-per-view for a while as well. Next time he wrestles on pay-per-view is at King of the Ring 94, and he's going to make one more surprise appearance at SummerSlam, but this essentially is last time we see Roddy Piper in a prominent role. So another massive star from the 80s gone. So thoughts on Piper, end of him basically, for a while.
Yeah, it's sad really, because this is someone who should have been a multi-time world champion. He had the fan base, he had the wrestling skill. It's just it maybe he was one of those guys who you just didn't need to put a title on. I suppose there is always that, but yeah, I would have liked to have seen him really kind of push for the top of the card. Some matches against Hogan and beating Hogan at WrestleMania would have been absolutely superb.
So, as I mentioned before, it's a Piper was in like the shape of his life, the best shape I've ever seen him, and yet this is, and you know, he's, like Mag said, he's put on one of the best matches that certainly I've ever seen him have, and yet this is the point where they're sort of pulling the rug out from under him. It doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Rob.
No, it is an all-time great, and one of the recent episodes that we've reviewed for UTT Podcast, Owen Hart says that the championship is just a leather strap with some tin on it. It doesn't mean anything. That, you know, the important thing's respect. And I think every wrestling fan, every wrestler respects Roddy Piper, and there's been lots of world champions that people don't respect. Mm-hmm. You know, people like your Jack Swaggers and your Jinder Mahals, that kind of thing. You know, no one's going to put them on the same level as Roddy Piper. You know, and at the end of the day, that's the important thing, really.
Mm-hmm. Jinder Mahal does come close for me, though.
I don't mind Jinder Mahals, but I know a lot of people in the community really hated it.
Cool. So, next we see Bobby, and he introduces the total package, Lex Luger, and promotes the WBF. How do you feel about doing a Patreon, guys, doing a review in the WBF two fat lads, four fat lads? Sorry.
Look at the
I mean, we'd get more than one person subscribed to it, I suppose.
I can call my mate Deacon, and he does a really good impression of Vince McMahon losing his shit over Gary Strider. Is it Strider or Sizem? I can't remember.
Yeah. But yeah, they talked to Lex Luger, so he's recently just left WCW, and I think he actually signed a contract to say he couldn't go directly to WWE. It was something like that. But they talk about the WBF, and Bobby Eaton's like, take off, give us a peek. Takes off his top, and the first thing that popped in my head, it was like, you look like one of them characters in the upcoming AEW game.
and then he tried to flex by drinking milk, and it was about a quarter of a pint. I mean, that was like, it's like two mouthfuls of milk, and he's like really showing off that he could neck this little glass of milk. Yeah, it was so cringy. And for me, I felt there was some sort of like disconnect between what Bobby was saying and then the reactions you got from Lex. I think that the Lex part was, it wasn't live at all, and it wasn't reacting to what Bobby was saying. I think Bobby was basically reacting to a video and kind of like leading a video into questions, if you understand what I mean. Like, he already knew what Lex was going to say and put the questions out to make it look like it was live when it really wasn't.
Well, speaking of milk, the UGT podcast, that's your specialty.
From the smile on your face, James, I didn't know if Max was talking about Bobby Heenan or Bobby Moore. I was like...
But no, it's a very weird promo. Cringe, I suppose, to say the word is. But it's nice to see Lex Luger. Like, I'll be honest,
he talked a lot of shit for a bloke who looked like a swollen Shane Douglas.
He's a big guy, though, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, I won't say it to his face. I might do now, but not then.
Cool. So we get to the next match. So it's the 8-man tag. It's the one Mags has been waiting all night for. It's the Mountie along with the Nasty Boys and the Reaper Man. So the backstage promo. the Reaper Man. We got Sludge, put up Slaughter. It was just so creepy.
I will not stand here for this besmirchment of the Reaper Man. He carried the Mountie and the Nasty Boys in this promo, so we'll have less of this.
There was something else that carried the Nasty.
Sorry, I was actually going to defend Reaper. he said it'd be the biggest repossessing in all WrestleMania history, and it'll be the only one, but he's still technically right.
But the other thing is, it's lucky he specified WrestleMania, because if you think about the amount of wrestling promotions that have probably had repossessions, I imagine ECW and Herb Abrahams and UWF were having repossessions every week. So it's lucky it's the biggest film in the history of wrestling.
Next, we see a promo by Sergeant Slaughter. Fucking hell, he had a fall from grace, didn't he? WrestleMania main event comedy 8-man tag team match. So yeah, we see a bland promo by him, Bossman, Verge, John Duggan, and then takes us to the match, and Family Feud host Ray Combs. So he had some pretty fun one-liners. The Mountie doesn't know the word for you, but quite frankly, there's not a lot of words he knows the meaning of. And what did he say about Repo Man, Max?
You know, I can't even remember. I would try and block out any slating of Repo Man, to be fair.
He said no one can call him Two-Faced, because otherwise he'd wear the other one.
Give credit to Ray Combs, though. He made all those gags and he was backing off. And then as soon as he was finished, he got out of that ring bloody quick, smart. I think he thought he was going to die.
My favorite thing was the Mountie again. He does the work of three men: Harry, Larry, and Mo.
It's a real come down, though, isn't it? I mean, this WrestleMania, we get Ray Combs, and you think about how many stars there were at WrestleMania 7. You know, and blown the budget on Ray Combs. You know, how much was he charging?
Survey says not a lot.
They did the best with the money they had.
There was a bit far when they were backstage. Sergeant Slaughter said the Mountie needs to check which horse he rode in on, because we know which horse he'll be leaving on.
Yeah, that was really weird. Yeah,
and Hacksaw basically shat on the match before it even started. We said it's not going to be a good wrestling match, but it'll be a fight.
It will be a fight. And then Virgil was, I've got this mask to protect my nose, but who is going to protect yours? Horrific, horrific promoing.
Definitely the press break match. One of the things I did enjoy, and Shawn Michaels spoke about this in his book, he actually said to Bobby Heenan to do this. So Bobby Heenan was like, wait, Dave, Shawn Michaels has left the building.
Who cares?
It's such a good way, though, just to remind people, like, this wrestler is such a great touch. But yeah, it was just... Sorry.
The taken that Shawn Michaels has left the building, because they used to do that at Elvis concerts. So Elvis has left the building, and, you know, they were sort of... And I remember watching it at this time, and my dad going, oh, they're just ripping off Elvis. But people used to cheer, and apparently people used to cheer at the Elvis concerts. Like, you've paid to come and see him, and he's buggered off home. So why are you cheering? You should be booing him. You should be getting back out here. Second encore.
But yeah, the best way to explain this match, just a comedy match. And at the end, Sags catches Nobbs. I forgot what item he used, but Fergil pins Nobbs for the 1-2-3. So just comedy match, wasn't it? Piss break match, essentially.
Bossman countering that move with just a hook by holding his fist up and accidentally punching someone in the nuts. I can't remember who it was. Apart from that, and
I was just going to say, Gorilla Monsoon asks Bobby Heenan who's legal in the match, because it's all sort of broken down, and Heenan says Danny Davis.
Again, he's not wrong.
That's true. Good. So next segment, we see Sean Mooney is with Mr. Perfect and Ric Flair. And Ric Flair's at the end, he's going to take Liz to Space Mountain. And Perfect was like, can I come too?
Well, you look kinky, so man. Weird.
It felt a bit scummy, didn't it?
And they had that big, what ended up being like a picture of Rick and Liz, which obviously were doctored. It was cringily creeper.
How were they going to show the audience this? Because in the build-up to this event, I remember them saying they're going to show everyone in the crowd at WrestleMania. But there weren't any big screens. So what were they going to do? Pass around a photocopy?
I actually the missus was watching this bit with me, and I mentioned that. I said, look, there's absolutely, how is they going to show that? There's no screens at all. And I even paused it for her to show that there was no big screens for them to watch it on.
Would have been a big picture, like a flag dropping from the ceiling, a big massive something. I think I can think of. Cool. And we see Gene, and he's outside Macho's room, but there's no answer. And then, we get into the match. So Ric Flair for the Macho Man, one of the main events for the WWF title. And what do you think to Macho Man's go that high? I loved it.
Mm-hmm. He was resplendent.
Yeah, and
he really was.
Well, and the match starts as the bell rings and they're outside. Then Perfect attacks Savage. So I'm like, okay, DQ. Ric Flair retains. That's it now, isn't it?
I thought it was good, though, that Flair tried to run away and Savage was chasing him down the aisle. Yeah. It was like...
It's what you'd expect from a feud that's that personal. Yeah. Like we've seen it a few times in recent years where feuds are allegedly really, really personal and they just start off with a lockup. Yeah. No, you want to beat the shit out of each other. In this case, have one of the wrestlers so bloody scared that he's running away.
And if anyone in this period was the best for those kind of feuds, it was Savage. I mean, he's only just coming off the Jake Roberts one where he essentially eliminated himself from a Royal Rumble to attack Jake Roberts. So it absolutely makes sense. You say to hell with the rules. I'm going to break your face open.
Yep. And one of the things I do like was when Flair was diving into the match and like catches him with like a little short arm clothesline, which I enjoyed. And I've always liked Macho Man's, you know, like double X handles off the top rope. Mm-hmm. And he does want to flare on the outside. And this is the point where Flair blades, and it's so blatant. And he got bollocked after this, and he got fined like $7,000 for it. So,
I mean, he may as well have gone up to the camera and just gone, it was so, so blatant.
What a great visual, though, with the blood in Flair's hair. Mm-hmm. It always looks fantastic. That just even now, anybody with bleached blonde hair, if you start bleeding in wrestling, it's just such a visceral image.
Mm-hmm. And especially with Flair's hair, because it goes wild like a mane at this period. He's not quite in the era where his hair gets sweaty. It just sticks out like it's like he's been electrified or something.
Yeah. And Savage does hit the Savage elbow and goes for the pin, but Perfect pulls him out, and Flair gets the nooks and to punch Savage, but Savage kicks out. Then Liz comes down, and speaking of Shane O'Mac, we see a young Shane McMahon. What do you think to his cameo?
Baby, yeah. Shane.
I think this was actually his debut as well. I don't think we'd ever seen him before.
I think he got outshined, though, because who was next to him?
Yes, he was. And in fact, I think he was listening to an episode of the UTT podcast, because he was fuming that he had to get up with those headphones on. Rene Goulet was ripping that Liz got involved.
I don't know if you noticed him, because he'd been sat at ringside the entire time up to this point. So they didn't even have him run out. It was like they kept him there just waiting to jump in at this point.
And sat and not moving. I think there was about three or four of them all sat like at the edge of one of the railings. And none of them were talking with each other. None of them were moving. They were just sat like statues. I mean, that UTT podcast is engrossing. So I can understand why.
Well, it's just a shame they didn't have Papa Shango sat with them.
Yeah, he could have done with it. Spoiler alert.
Yep, and Flair takes over, and there's the one part he says, "This is for you, baby." And in the end, Macho Man gets him in the schoolboy 1-2-3. And we've got a new World Wrestling Federation champion, but it's a short-lived victory, because Flair attacks him afterwards, kisses Liz, and the thing that makes me laugh here, all the agents came out and they held down Savage while Ric Flair was attacking him.
Yeah.
Especially, I think it might have been Tony Garea. He had him like in a proper like chicken wing hold, like had his legs tied up and everything.
And it's just a shame for Savage, because this should have been like a crowning moment for him. He got his way back to the title, but instead, Flair and Perfect come off looking like they were the winners, because they essentially got to survive and he got pinned down by a load of officials.
It was just bizarre, wasn't it? Like, why are they holding down one guy so that two others can beat the shit out of him? Mm-hmm. It was just odd. And then, you know, the guy's just seen his wife essentially get sexually assaulted, and Elizabeth rightly got a few shots in, which was quite good. Just to go in a completely different direction, Bobby Heenan at one point during this match hit like almost Jerry Lawler, 90s Jerry Lawler puppies level of creep, talking about the pictures of Liz. And I was just like, I don't know, I just thought Heenan would be better than that. I know it's a heel move and he's only done it in this match, but still, I was just kind of like, oh, for fuck's sake, it's like having Lawler back.
So it's okay to pair that Sherry, but not at Liz, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
No, I don't know. I never said I was perving at Sherry.
You didn't have to.
That was you, boys.
Cool. Well, yeah, so Matchman's new champ, but we go backstage to see Sean Mooney's with Perfect Flair. Bobby comes down screaming. Flair looked like a complete psychopath. We mentioned his hair is everywhere, just all the blood in it. He was just like off it on this promo.
Yeah, and Perfect. Shut up, Mooney. Yeah, friend of the show, Sean Mooney, not getting his due respect.
Nope, never got enough respect for Sean.
But again, like Dan was saying about the Bobby Heenan stuff and the photo, this was creepy as well. When Flair was saying he was gonna kiss Elizabeth on her moist, wet lips, oh, that's another level creepy. That.
And we see Macho Man with Gene and Liz, and sad to say, lads, it's the last time we'll be seeing Miss Elizabeth. Another megastar from the 80s gone. So after this, she disappears for it. This was during the time her and Macho was going through a divorce. They was meant to continue this angle, but with Liz involved, but started getting divorced. So she got writ off, and eventually she turns up in WCW. But another star from the 80s gone from the Hulkamania era. What's your thoughts on Elizabeth leaving there? Start with you, Megs.
Yeah, I think this is a... you can understand why in this situation. She's obviously, they're having marital troubles, and I bet it can be so hard to put on that kind of like we're in love face when you essentially you're not. So I understand her wanting out, because at the end of the day, she wasn't a wrestler. While she was one of the hugest stars, it must have been really awkward for her, especially when you hear the stories of how possessive and controlling Randy was. You'd just want out, wouldn't you? So it's a shame that one of the brighter spots of WWF around this time has gone, but I totally understand the reasoning why.
Yep. Dan?
Can't say much different, really. It's just how quickly things turn around. Not long back, we were looking at the wedding on was it the SummerSlam, wasn't it?
Yeah.
SummerSlam 91. Here we are, 8 months later, and it's all going wrong for him, bless them. So, but yeah, it's you just at the end of the day, you can't expect somebody to work with the soon to be ex husband. So it's a lot again loss for the business, but more than understandable.
Rob, and yeah, I mean, it's a shame because, I mean, we've said it before, she was kind of almost inexplicably over. She was massively over, but she'd just kind of often stand there and not do very much. And then again, you know, what I guess one of the great things about us reviewing these episodes on UTT Podcast, which you can also hear on this channel, is that we get to see her sort of later on. So we see her in WCW and she's there with Flair and stood next to Woman. And, you know, she looks... So she's like a shell of herself at that point. You know, Woman is the most charismatic one on the screen, not Liz, you know. And, you know, just to have lost that sort of charisma, it's just bizarre. And it's sad because, you know, she managed to get a wedding over. It was the main event, you know?
Yeah. Cool. And I forgot to mention on the last show, so I mentioned the fact like there was about 11 or 12 stars that was their last WWE pay-per-view or show for, rather completely last one or for a while. I forgot to mention the fact the Warlords, that was his last pay-per-view as well. Can't believe I missed that. Yeah. So the Warlord's gone, so we're losing all the big hitters now. Speaking of big hitters, we're at the WWE press conference and we see funny Jack Tunney. So was it great seeing Jack Tunney again?
It was a little bit of a weird lineup they had on that table, wasn't it? We've got all the big stars. You know, it's Taker, Piper, and then there's Mean Gene and Jack Tunney in the middle. And then Hogan, Macho, and Sid. You know, it's like, who put Tunney up there? And what's Mean Gene doing there?
So, yeah, so it was a press conference to announce who they would be challenging Ric Flair for the WWF title. And Sid does the old mistake. He stands up early, and then it's not, and it's Hulk Hogan. Yes! Yes!
And the way Sid sits down and grabs his paper and rips it up. Oh, was he fuming, do you reckon? I don't know if he I don't know if he quite got it across. It was very, very subtle.
He said it was bogus. It's like... Yeah. This is one of the problems they have when they're presenting it for a PG audience, because you know you don't normally expect someone to come out with some foul language at this point, but bogus was the best they could put in this situation.
Even fucking bogus sounds wrong.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could essentially put that on Sid, because let's be fair, he wasn't the best at ad-libbing. I mean, we all know that infamous Jim Ross promo where he goes, "Can we start again?" He's like, "No, mate, it's live, pal." So he may have just thought the word bogus and it comes out.
Yeah, but he has got half the brain of Kevin Nash.
That is also true.
Well, that basically led to Saturday night's main event. So Hogan, Sid was in a tag team match with Taker and Flair, and Hogan's reaching for the tag brother, but Sid leaves him. And then he goes on to the Brutus barbershop, and Brutus, the little coward, little shithouse, ran away from him. Be looking for Hogan.
Help me, Hulk, help me.
My favorite, though, because Sid's been smashing up the stage, the sight of a steroid up monster with white powder all over his face.
from the fire extinguisher. That's brilliant. And then he makes a massive effort to push it over the candy cane sands. Yeah, and him laughing and with all the powder in his face, yeah, it looks maniacal.
It's the epitome of it, like the late 80s, early 90s wrestling.
If the white was like under his nostrils, it would have made a lot more sense, to be fair.
Do we know if Sid had been charging Brutus protection money to run his barbershop and he hadn't paid? He's sort of running him out of town.
Then we see a montage of him, of Sid beating some jobbers. And then we see the next match, we see the zombie Indian tribe. And we see go backstage for Shawn Mooney's with Rick Martel, Sans, and Mullet. I'm disappointed in Martel. But yeah, next match, Rick Martel with a debut in Tatanka. So I'll be honest, I was a fan of Tatanka growing up. Yourselves?
Yeah, same. I thought it was a breath of fresh air. It was someone who I always thought they were going to push right to the top, but obviously he only got to the mid-card level. But yeah, I was a huge fan of him as a kid.
It's funny, these people that they bring in and they give the undefeated streaks to. Because he went ages without losing, didn't he? And then they just sort of gave up. And not long from now, they did the same sort of thing with like Ludwig Borger as well, didn't they? And just ends for no reason. And it's like, why do that if you've not got an end game?
Yeah, why build them up?
And
it's like Vince is like a kid with a new toy and he plays with it for a while and then just goes, bored now, next one.
And Bobby Heenan's found a new... victim for his racist jokes, because he's moved on from El Matador and he's gone to Tatanka. How did you like, hey,
oh God, I cringed. Yeah, I just cringed. It's like, it's the most obvious joke as well. The most obvious shit joke.
The Christmas cracker jokes.
Yeah.
I was saying he thought they were going back to Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that one was brutal.
And back and forth match, good pace. And, yep, end of the match comes where Tatanka ducks the clothesline, hits a running crossbody for a 1-2-3. So, yeah, victory for Tatanka. But, yeah, Rick Martel, he's dropped down the card quite a bit now, considering last year he was in one of our favourite matches, the blindfold match with Jake Roberts. So, yeah, it's since WrestleMania he has dropped down the card quite a lot, Martel. But not too. So yeah, that's him. So next we see Sean Mooney's with Money Inc. So Money Inc. is the tag team champion. So what do you think to Money Inc. in this promo?
Yeah, I mean, Money Inc. was. It wasn't a long run tag team, but I thought they were really good. They worked well together. The whole kind of like mindset of the team. I think they had chemistry. They gelled really well. Yeah, I used to like Money Inc.
I was amazed with this promo how they managed to. They had one sentence, I think, just about each, and yet delivered one of the best promos of the night. When, what was it, DiBiase says, you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, and you don't write checks you don't have the funds to cover. Mm-hmm. And then IRS just chips in with its tax time, so it's time to pay up to Money Incorporated. We won't be taking you lightly, but we will be taking you.
Yeah.
Very although awesome. That Superman's cape spinning into the wind, I'm sure Jesse Ventura said that in commentary in earlier WrestleManias or whatever.
Probably so.
Yeah, and next, well, I don't remember that, but
yep. And we see Gene and with Natural the new face Natural Disasters. So, what do you think of this promo by the Disasters? I think they work as faces myself.
I love the Earthquake calls Typhoon Big Typhoon.
It's like even though he's bigger than him. Yeah, but, I mean. They were, again, they're not a long-lived tag team, but they really kind of stuck out. I mean, you still get people remembering them to this day, so they did what they meant to do. I don't think the promo was as good as the IRS and DiBiase one, but this was more Fat Block shouting than anything.
I had three things written down for this. Shouty cocaine promo, revenge, grr.
They're a hairy tag team, ain't they? Do you know what they need?
Not especially. I don't think they're that especially hairy. Especially Earthquake. He's quite losing a lot of his hair.
Oh, but what about the body hair, Mags? Because today's episode has been sponsored by Manscaped. So let me tell you about Manscaped. So recently, I was given the gift package from Manscaped. I was given the Lawnmower 3.0. With this is the closest cut I've ever had using a shaver. So beforehand, if you wanted to sort your business out, you don't really want to use the shaver you use on your face. So you either bought another cheap chunky shaver with a big massive head on it, or you would use scissors or even razor blades. Well, say goodbye to all that. Because with the Lawnmower 3.0, not only is it small and compact, it gets into them little areas what you'd normally miss. Also, we've got LED light on it, so it'll light up areas you would possibly miss. Not just that, it's also waterproof, so you can do this while you're having a shower. And it's not just for your balls area. If you want to use your armpits, your chest hair, shoulders, any nasty hairs, what's unsightly, hey, it's coming up to the summertime, coming up beach season. We all want to look good on the beach. So if you, not only do you get that with it, you get the weed whacker, which also does your nose hairs and your ears hairs, which is just as handy. You also get little creams and oils. And a free extra set of boxer shorts, which is even handy. And you also get a nice case, which is very stylish. And you can just keep everything in that little small compact case. So, what you have to do, head over to manscaped.com or use the link in my description. If you use my code 90s, that's 90s, not only do you get 20% off, but you also get free shipping to anywhere. So, like I said, use 90s and feed 20% off and... Remember, take care of your balls, and your balls will take care of you.
And speaking of balls, this match was balls.
Exactly.
Master of the segue, Mags over there.
I did like it at the start of the match where Heenan says, you better concentrate on DiBiase and IRS, because they're wrestlers. So it's just shit on everyone else that's been on the card before, or in WWF before.
Yeah. Oh, or even who's coming on after.
He also sprinkled in a little bit of misogyny because there was a woman at ringside with a natural disasters rule sign, and Penan just comes out with if she was home doing the dishes, she wouldn't have time to make stupid signs like that.
I didn't even clock that. That's horrific. Wow.
He's like throughout the course of this, he's hit the Heenan character. I've thought it before and I've thought it again. He'd make a great like Fox News pundit in modern times.
Yeah. Cool. And yeah, it was a pretty dead match, really. Yeah, crowd was dead for it for a long time, but the end comes where Money Inc. just leaves for the count out victory. So this is actually the second count out victory in a row for the natural disasters on pay-per-view. So unfortunately they don't grab the belts. But yeah, so we got to the next segment and we see Gene and he's with Brutus. What the fuck is Brutus wearing?
What the fuck was Gene doing calling Brutus one of the all-time greats?
Yeah, that really stuck in my craw, that. Oh. And then going on about how he about his boating accident and like how he's a miracle he survived. You were literally Hulk Hogan's friend. You got a job from being the friend of Hulk Hogan. That's it.
This whole promo encapsulates Beefcake's career. He's only there because he's Hogan's mate, and then he's given his promo saying that, you know, Hogan's a good guy. Of course you like him. He's your fucking meal ticket.
Yeah. He was the biggest shill in this. It's like, I'll always be the number one Hulkamaniac. I'm like, yeah, there's not many people who wants that job these days, though, Brutus. So, you ain't got much competition.
Hasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Sorry?
Haven't Beefcake and Hogan fallen out now?
Yeah.
I think they're friends again, because didn't Hogan induct him in the Hall of Fame a couple of years back? Because they fell out beforehand, but then Hogan inducted him, so I think they're on terms again. I might be wrong.
I remember seeing a shoot interview with Brutus where he was trying to shill his book, and he does not but slate Hogan, saying that Hogan basically used him as a lacquer, and then when he was at no use anymore, just bagged him off.
Well, it's so yeah, it's weird, but yeah, I know he blames Bischoff. I know Bischoff doesn't like him. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, but yeah, and we get to the next match in a blink and you'll miss it match. We see Owen Hart against Skinner. So safe to say Skinner takes control, but Owen hits him with an O'Connor row and 1-2-3. So pretty short match, but yeah, good little win for Owen Hart. It makes shorter work off Skinner than what Brett did at this Tuesday in Texas.
And a sick backflip by Owen on his entrance as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and a really good skin in the cat as well.
Mm. And this is after Skinner's spit tobacco in his face. It's like a dirty mooter mist that is spread
off. Oh, Jesus. Maybe that's...
he'd give him the lumpy mooter.
Maybe that's what Alexa Bliss took for inspiration for her gimmick at WrestleMania this year.
Yes. Cool. And next we see Gene Oakland, and he's with Sid and Harvey Whippleman, and Gene's talking, and Sid's like, "Shut up, you fat bald-headed mo."
Why can't I call him ball-headed? Because I've written down that Rene Goulet is the only ball head on this card.
He's not. He's not, but we'll get to that later.
They have a promo. Then it cuts to Vince McMahon with Hulk Hogan and one of them serious promos. Is it true that, you know, this could be your last match? It's weird as well, you know, because when I used to watch early days WWE like this, I literally had no idea that Vince McMahon was the owner, you know, when I was a kid. And I was fully entrenched in kayfabe because I thought that, like, legit, the Gorilla Monsoon took over the company when Jack Johnny retired. And then and I thought Gorilla passed it on to Vince McMahon, because to me, Vince McMahon was always the commentator. So I'm like, Vince McMahon's now the owner. And then he became, you know, Mr. McMahon. And I'm like, what's happening here? I miss kayfabe so much.
Well, Tony and Gorilla Monsoon had actually had some ownership at some point in time, but yeah, just not true. That point in time.
Yeah, but this sit-down interview, could Vince be sucking Hogan off anymore without actually putting lip to dick? It was so cringe that, Hogan, if this is your last match, I want to thank you for all the little Hulkamaniacs. Thank you, Hogan. And he's like, come on, man. And I noticed, well, Hogan was wearing a WBF shirt as well. So get that promo in, lads.
And yeah, we see Gene with Sid again. And yeah, Sid's going to be like, you know, you remember me as the last one to have Hogan's match. And so yeah, we quick span to Gorilla and Bobby. And we go to the main event. So Sid, Justice, or Psycho Sid, or Maniacal Sid, I think they were trying to call him as well, against Hulk Hogan. And I did actually love it when, during the opening of the match, Hulk Hogan's theme song still playing. I loved it.
Yeah, for the first like 2 or 3 minutes of the actual match, so I'm like, what, is this a WWE Network thing? Have they got this wrong? But yeah, it played for quite a while.
Before it even started, though, Fink introducing Harvey Whippleman and the look on Fink's face as he just gave it with such disdain and despair. I absolutely loved that.
I once went to a Huddersfield Town away match at Port Vale. And they ran out to Let Me Entertain You, and they kept playing it during the start of the match. And we scored while they were still playing Let Me Entertain You.
That's great. That's what they should do these days, with no fans, just let music carry on playing the football matches. It'd be so better.
Yeah, just put on that Now 55 or whatever, and just let it play through.
I was driving by the road. I was driving the other day, and I noticed that like it was like we're up to like Now 128 or something like that. I'm like, fucking hell. So bit of a plodding match, really. Test of strength. I've always enjoyed Sid's choke slams. You know, when he goes down to one knee, it's something I've always liked. But yeah, not much to say during this match, really. End of the match comes. I mean, I suppose the ending is the most memorable thing because Sid hits a powerbomb, 1-2, and then Hulk Hogan hulks up. And during the hulk up, you know, now looking back, I'm thinking, can you imagine that getting over this day and age?
Just not become, at all.
Before even that, though, there was a point where Sid, he had hold of Hulk's shoulder, and they were selling it as if it was the most devastating submission move known to man. And Hulk was there, like, getting knocked out. He literally had his hand on his collarbone, doing him no harm whatsoever. But obviously that was the setup for Hulk to do his traditional hulking up and becoming the hardest man that ever lived.
But they had him on the verge of hulking up from the off, pretty much. Like, just after the music faded, I think there was a face-off, Sid hit the knee, kicked Hogan, and he was already on a premature hulkulation, just, like, half-shaking and all that, and it was... And you know what you're going to get from Hogan, but even that was telegraphing it.
Yeah.
That thing with the nerve hold, though, it says everything about today's product, that they would sell something like that, that it was devastating. There was a great promo, it wasn't a promo, it was an interview Paul Heyman gave, where he said, "You could, if you were to give like a headlock to Mark Henry as a finisher and sell it for months and months, it was the most devastating thing, and have people screaming in pain when in the headlock, people would accept it." Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they've gone completely the other way, where they have to make things look devastating and kick out on one.
Who's a better worker, Hulk Hogan or Kenny Omega?
Well, Hulk Hogan's made him a lot more money.
For doing a lot less.
And for doing a hell of a lot less. So yeah, I mean you've gotta give people like Hulk the props that they knew how to finesse a crowd out of the money for doing as little as possible. That's the art of wrestling, I suppose.
Exactly. Kevin Nash said it best. I think he said I was having a match with Hulk. And Hulk said, "Ease up. We've already got their money." That's true. So, he hulks up, hits the leg drop, 1-2, and a kick out. And Sid's one of the first people, if not the first person, to kick out the leg drop. Reason for this, Papa Shango was late. I don't know why.
it was so late, though. It wasn't like he missed by a few seconds. It was late by minutes. And even when he was running down, he stopped. And then thought, oh, shit, I'm definitely going to be late now. And off he come.
Well, he started running down. You saw him stood there waiting as well.
It was like That time Les Ferdinand had to take a shit at half time.
If ever I have him on the show, I'm going to ask him. He's probably been asked it, but I've never actually heard the answer myself, so I'm going to ask him one day if he comes on. But yeah, what Harvey Ruffman, as they interfered, all he'd done was got into the ring, and because of that, him and Sid got disqualified, which I got no idea why. But yeah, DQ win for Hulk Hogan. Papa Shango runs in, they attack Hulk, and then the music hits, and Hulk Hogan gets saved by the Renegade. What happened? It was not the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, it was so bad. It was so, so bad.
There was a lot of conspiracy theorists during the time. In fact, they was convinced this was the Texas Tornado dressed up as the Warrior. They said that the Warrior died. That was this rumor going around for a long time.
I mean, I don't subscribe to those theories. I think this was the Warrior, but you can tell he'd been off the he'd been off the gas, I think, and slimmed down a little bit. Ironic that Hogan leaves not long after this because of the exact same problems.
Yeah, well, that's it. So Hogan poses afterwards, him and the Warrior, and that's it. And this is it, lads. This is the end of Hulkamania. So after this, he leaves for a while till WrestleMania 9, where he returns. But so many pay-per-views in a row, and this is it. So the era of Hulkamania is over. How do you feel?
Yay!
Relieved.
One of the other departures I forgot to mention was Sergeant Slaughter as well. So I don't think he wrestles on WWE pay-per-view till... I might be wrong. I don't think he wrestles to the boot camp match against Triple H in 97. I might be wrong. Wow. I might be wrong, but that's off the top of my head. And another kind of short-term departure as well was Gorilla Monsoon. This is the last time I'm going to hear him on commentary till Rumble 93. So one of them other voices, figures from the 80s, is starting to transition into leaving a bit. So... definitely the end of an era. We mentioned on the last show how many people left, and this show, same, like Jake, Liz, Warlorders, left the last one, Roddy Piper, Slaughter, so Sid's last pay-per-view now till he makes his return in 95. And yeah, Hogan gone, so definitely the end of an era.
It is bizarre, the sort of turnover at this period. Especially when you sort of look at the modern products, and you've got some people who've just been there forever, you know, like a Dolph Ziggler or whatever. But they didn't stay around for too long in this era, did they?
No, it's I mean,
there were alternatives that they could go to, and now I mean, recently we've got obviously AEW, but before that it was either WWE or the Indies.
Yeah. It's definitely a transitional year, 1992, for the World Wrestling Federation. That's the end of WrestleMania 8. So, thoughts on the show, Dan? What do you reckon to this show?
I quite enjoyed it. It's just it's another show where Hogan's in the main event, and so by the end of it, I just don't give a toss. It started out really strong. I even liked. Like Owen Hart versus Skinner, for what it was, it only got a couple of minutes, but they crammed enough in for us to talk about and to mention. Money Inc. versus Natural Disasters, it was what it was. I think again, yeah, they just they wasted all the air material in the first half. If they'd have ended it on Flair Savage halfway through, and you know maybe charged half the price, I'd have been more than happy with that. But
Rob.
Yeah, I mean, two great matches, the Flair Savage and the Piper Bret Hart match. I think there were three big botches on this show. I think there was the Shawn Michaels botch that we discussed. I think the Tatanka match, he looked really surprised when he won. I think they went home early from it. And the Papa Shango one. And, you know, I felt the last hour really dragged. I was like, when you guys were going sending the DMs, oh, this was a great pay-per-view, I'm thinking,
Legs.
Yeah, I think Rob and Dan have pretty much covered it. For me, this was almost like two pay-per-views crammed together. It should have ended with Flair and Savage, and then it's almost like they've gone back to the kind of like warm-up matches building up to Hogan and Sid. It's essentially like a two-day WrestleMania. The first day was better than the second day, and it was the same on this pay-per-view. The first half was a lot better than the second half.
Cool. Right, so we'll get to some awards. So, first award night, match of the night. So, we'll start with you, Mugs.
Yeah, Rob mentioned it just a minute ago. There's two absolute standout matches, and it's really hard to pick between the two. But just for the emotion and the in-ring work, I've got to go with Savage and Flair. I don't particularly like the ending so much. I think Savage should have had the opportunity to celebrate winning the title at WrestleMania. But in terms of the match, it was such a well-told story. And we also got to see the 360-degree mullet of Rene Aguilar get involved. So it was win-win-win.
Cool. Rob?
I'm going to go for Brett Piper. I think it was a really well-worked match. You know, even just the last few seconds of the match is sort of one of those classic clips that gets played over and over again with the reversal of the sleeper hold, etc. But it's really fine margins. As you said, two brilliant matches on this card.
Cool. Dan?
I'm going to go with Brett versus Piper as well. And it was actually something you said earlier, James, that tipped it over the edge for me. The fact that they had to basically do the build to this in that pre-match promo and yet still got such emotional investment out of me and the live audience. And they put on an absolute stormer. So, yeah, Brett versus Piper for me.
Cool. And same for me. So the spirit of Tolly is in Mags tonight. But no, two great matches. And like, I know they kind of botched the ending with Tito and Sean, but I actually enjoy that match as well, to be fair. But yeah, Brett Piper, it's one of the matches I remember from my childhood and going back watching it. And made me appreciate Roddy Piper more because I've always known for Piper to be like a promo. But like this match, he was really good. And then just the story and the storytelling at the end, like with the ring bell, is he going to like attack him with it or drop it and decide to drop it? And put over Brett massively. I know Brett was already an IC champion by this time, but yeah, he put him over massively. So good match. So I really enjoyed it. So that's my match tonight. And go to the next award, I suppose. MVP of the night. So we'll start with you, Dan.
I'm going back to the same match. It's Roddy Piper for me. The sort of his ability to flip from like the cheeky chappy having a laugh bit with his mate Babyface to an absolute hot-headed sort of half psycho dickhead heel just before the match was brilliant. He had all the shithousery during it and yet found himself again by the end of it. That was more sort of character work in 25 minutes, half an hour than some people get in years of the career. And that, just like I say, to be able to do all that with very little build, very little notice, it was Piper for me.
Cool. Mags?
I mean, for me, it's got to be Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Has anybody been such a Hulk Hogan fan as him? No. I think Dan's hit the nail on the head. Piper with his... with the way he can switch from being the biggest face to a shithouse of a heel in the blink of an eye, and then back and forward in a match. I mean, there was that many kind of heel face turns in that match that you'd think Big Show was involved. It was that good. But yeah, great telling of a story. Left the match looking better than he went in, and then also Bret Hart looking $1 million. So yeah, I've got to give it to Piper.
Rob.
I'm gonna go with the Macho Man. I think he just plays this, as I've said before, Descent into Madness / Jealousy storyline really well. And, you know, just like, you know, chasing Flair back down the aisle, that kind of thing. And,
you know, I think this was exactly the role he excels in. So I'm giving it to the man that I gave the MVP of the whole year for last year. I'm starting again. Still giving him the award.
Cool. I think I'm in agreement with Dan and Mags, Roddy Piper. So I was tempted to give it to Brett. I was tempted to give it to Macho. But yeah, Piper just cut a hell of a promo. It was one of these best promos I've heard and or watched. And like we said, started off as a baby face. During the match, he was heel and then back to a baby face again and making Brett look like $1 million. So yeah, I'm going to go to Roddy Piper as well. So two more awards. So we'll go to the moment of the night. So we'll start with you, Rob.
I think it was Piper putting over Brett after the match. Yeah. You know, just passing the torch, and after everything that had happened in that match, and sort of the emotional roller coaster, as you say, the face heel turns are all in one match, and then it all coming together at the end.
Cool, Mags.
I think it's the Brett and Piper promo just before the match, and my two esteemed fellow guests have said it built a story out of nothing. And the way you saw Piper switch from being a goofy, lovable Piper to vicious heel Piper when he threatened to chin Bret Hart with that the roll of tape, and he's kind of like the way he was obsessed about Bret not looking at the title and not touching the title, and the way he fitted in a pirate gimmick right at the end by saying "She be mine." Yeah, I've got to give that as my moment of the night.
Done.
It's the passing of the torch for me between Piper and Bret, same as Rob. Just again, after they've taken you on a 25-minute emotional roller coaster, I was actually half expecting Piper just to waffle him with the belt just out of nowhere, because obviously I couldn't remember the finish and the end of the match before I watched it. But just to see that moment of respect and for it to be so well received by the crowd, it was just a fitting end to that, and a fitting end to Piper's involvement really on pay-per-view.
And I'm probably in agreement with that, actually, the passing of the torch. So, like I said, it was a good promo, great match. And at the end, it actually meant something, like the IC title being swapped. It did actually mean something during that match. So, got to go with that. And that's the final one, the Mullet of the Night. Quite a few contenders. I think I'll start things off. So, a return to the show, but also a departure for a little bit. I've got to give it to Brutus Beefcake. He had the full-on mullet. He had some highlights on the go as well, so that's my pick. Rob?
Yeah, I'm giving to Brutus Beefcake as well. I'm going to be really specific. It's Brutus Beefcake in the flashbacks, because he'd sort of grown his hair at the front out a bit more, you know, when he was actually on the show. But no, the flashback, Brutus has to take it this time.
For me, I just want to mention one haircut first, and it was the referee in the opening match. He had the most fantastic bowl cut this side of Rene Goulet.
Yeah, I know.
So a special mention for him. But my mullet of the night is one of the more subtle mullets on the show, and it goes to Tatanka.
Oh, yeah.
He had the great red on the top, but then did you see that he had the tufts at the back just swinging out slightly? So a subtle mullet, but he gets extra points for the red.
Not random guys up third row on the left hand side.
No, I'll spare you the editing this month. I'll be back to form next month.
Thanks.
I'm going along the same lines as Dan, but I'm not going with Tatanka. I'm actually going with that referee, because it was such an outstandingly perfect bowl cut / helmet head that I actually paused it to try and find out what the referee's name was. Anyway, I found out he is called Roger Ruffin. So Roger Ruffin gets my mullet of the night, and the guy was also the referee in the Piper and Bret Hart match as well. And couple it with that mustache, it's Lloyd Christmas way before Dumb and Dumber was even a thing.
Cool. Right, lads, thanks so much for coming on. So before we go, tell everyone where they can find you. We'll start with you, Max.
Yep, you can find me only on the Twitters at DAJ Kurt Bear. By the time this drops, my essentially flagship show, Badlands. It'll be dead and buried because Paul Tallet did a Jake the Snake and walked out on me. in all serious, Paul stepped away from wrestling content, and we always said that if one of us stepped away, that show wouldn't be the same without each of us. So unfortunately, that ban now will have gone by the wayside. But I have a few irons in the fire, maybe seeing more of me, but you can still catch me on this. You can catch me on Chain Wrestling with Simon from SJP Words, on Radio Techers. Yeah, I'm all over. Anytime you've heard a podcast, you've probably heard my voice on it.
Cool. And the UTT podcast, Robin Dunn.
Yes, this is perfect.
So this is your gimmick. This is your gimmick.
Yeah. I was just about to say, you can find me at Dan Griffin, and I can't get my own Twitter handle right now, fuck's sake, at Dan Griffin 21 on Twitter, or you can find me interrupting Rob every week on at UTT Podcast.
I think it was me that interrupted you that time. It's role reversal. So you can listen to UTT Podcast either on the same channel that you're listening to this, if you're listening via podcast. If you're on YouTube, hop over and listen to it on podcast as well. Pump up the numbers. Or you can listen to it on its own channel if you search for UTT Podcast. You can find me at UTT Rob. More than happy to follow back anyone that follows.
Cool. And for everyone who wants to find me, you can find me on Twitter at 90s Wrestling Pod. And if you want to track me on Instagram, you can catch me at Fat 90s Wrestling Podcast. And yeah, and if you're listening to this show on the podcast form, please give us a 5-star rating, share, subscribe, tell your friends. That'd be great. And if you're watching us on YouTube, same thing again, give us a subscribe, share, comment, and yeah, give us a like, and it really does help the channel out. And also, like I said, I want to thank the sponsors, Manscaped. So, like I said, if you want to get 20% knocked off and free shipping, use my code 90s, that's 90s. And I'm not just saying, it's actually decent stuff. I wouldn't want them to sponsor me if it wasn't the case. And I've always wanted to do this show as a hobby, but yeah, it's always fun to put some brands over and really will help you out. It's really good stuff, so I do recommend it. So like I said, use the code 90s and you'll get 20% knocked off, so it's a pretty decent deal. Until next time, lads. Next time we'll be leaving the States and we'll be going to jolly old London because SummerSlam 92, a show I'm really looking forward to. So I'm guessing it's one you're looking forward to also.
It's one of my favorite pay-per-views ever. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And, yeah, so we're leaving the Hulkamania era behind us, and we're in this transitional year before we get to the new generation era. So, yep, it's a new year and a new era. So, yeah, so till then, everyone, thanks again, and we'll catch you in the next one. Bye. Yeah.